Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
You are Locked On Pelicans, your daily podcast on the New Orleans Pelicans. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Welcome to another edition of Locked On Pelicans. I'm your host, Jake Madison, at Nola Jake on Twitter. And when I last left you all on Friday, the Pelicans were 9-18, and there was no intro music on the podcast. And now here on Monday morning, the Pelicans are 9-20, two losses to the Houston Rockets and the San Antonio Spurs. But there is podcast music, a nice little intro making us sound a bit more professional. So, you know, one out of two ain't bad, I guess. Not quite two out of three, but hey, we can take whatever wins we can take here. The Pelicans certainly aren't providing them in any other way. That song is a song titled Moxie by the local band out of New Orleans called The Vox and the Hound. You can check them out. It's at The Vox and the Hound on Twitter. And their website, I got it right here, is just voxandthehound.com. That's voxandthehound.com. So pretty fun. They offered their music to me. It's been fun trying to mix and pick the song I wanted to use, but that one is called Moxie. The Vox and the Hound has a new album coming out. Probably they're expecting a spring of 2017 release. There's no exact date on it yet. That's going to be called Aloha Shores. The first single is going to be a song called Recapitulated. It's going to be released at Gasa Gasa on Ferret Street, actually right by where I live, so I'll certainly be there for it on February 10th. So that's an event you want to make sure you don't miss. Should be a lot of fun. And big thanks to those guys for letting me use the music on the podcast. I'll have other songs I'm going to cycle through from theirs with different intros, just depending on the mood. We can have a lot of fun with it. That's the nice thing of having creative control on here. And frankly, after the Pelicans drop in two games this weekend, need something to be excited about. So hopefully this will be it. Those two games are certainly what I'm going to be talking about today on Locked On Pelicans, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Don't forget, the podcast is on iTunes. It's on Audioboom, Stitcher. It's got a Twitter handle. It's at Locked On Pels. Pretty easy to remember and to follow. So make sure you're subscribing on any of those channels, however you prefer to listen. Stitcher's the app I use for my phone to listen to podcasts when I'm driving around, when I'm at my house working. So it's a great thing. You make sure when you subscribe that you get these things daily. The podcast comes out at 6 a.m. every day, aside from last week when there were a lot of technical issues. But that's all sorted out now. It's 6 a.m. right now if you're listening when it first comes out. So 6 a.m. every day, you know when it's coming out. No other place is giving you content like this on a daily basis that you can listen to on your car ride. So please make sure you're subscribing. Make sure you're sharing it on Facebook, on Twitter. However, just telling people word of mouth is also a great thing, and it definitely helps the podcast. And if anyone's interested in advertising on here, you guys hear me read some ads. It's got a great reach. There's a great demographic, so don't hesitate to reach out. The email you can reach me at, it's jake@bourbonstreetshots.com. So other than those two games and kind of recapping these pretty disastrous losses for the Pelicans, I'd say. Not that they were expected to win, and they're disastrous as in they came close and lost it. They just, you know, were outplayed massively in both matchups. I want to talk a little bit towards the end of the podcast about the new CBA, the collective bargaining agreement that's tentatively been reached between the Players Association and the NBA owners, the regents or directors, whatever they're called. Don't forget, a couple of years ago, the Pelicans, and then Hornets, had a shortened season. The entire NBA did, because of a lockout where the owners decided they didn't like the current agreement. They shut the players out. They played a 66 games schedule that year, so losing a handful of games. This, if they reach an agreement and it gets ratified by the players' union, which it sounds like they're going to be having a vote in the new year on, prevents that from happening. We're not going to miss any games. There's a lot of interesting developments about it. Some, you know, it's all going to pertain to every team, but I want to talk a little bit about how it's specifically going to affect the Pelicans, and there's a few major ways with that. So that's going to be on the second half of the podcast. So we'll probably go a little bit longer today. So make sure you listen to the entire thing. So the first game we got to talk about, the Rockets game, where the Pelicans lose 122-100, a shellacking, smacking, whatever S word you want to use with it. S is definitely the one it's got to start with. And this was on Friday. So the Rockets attempted an NBA record, 61 threes in the game. And it's tough to describe how jarring of a number that is to see in the box. Where I was watching the game, I was out with my girlfriend, and we were paying attention to it, not that much. I heard they'd said that they set the record on the broadcast. And then you look at the box score the next day and you kind of scroll on down and you see in three-pointers attempted, it's a double-digit number that starts with a six. It's still, even knowing they did this and watching it happen and seeing them launch all these attempts, a very shocking thing to see and very surprising. Not only that, they tied, I think it was, the regular season record because they made 24 of them. 24 made threes against the Pelicans. The Pelicans in the game themselves took 27 threes total. The Rockets made three less than the Pelicans attempted. That is a mind-blowing number. And that's good for 39.3%. At a certain point, it's just math. And if you're making that many three-pointers, and they're, you know, the Pelicans are only making nine of them. They shot 9 of 27 on the night, 33.3%. So they're primarily making twos on their made shots. It's a math thing. You're just not going to be able to overcome this barrage of shots in the lead. So it's no surprise here, and I don't think anyone was expecting the Pelicans to go out and win, especially on the second night of a back-to-back, after they used a lot of energy in that come-from-behind win against the Pacers to go on that 15-point run. I talked about this on Friday at the end of the game. But man, 61 attempts, and most of those are wide open. I'll be honest, the lack of perimeter defense was kind of shocking. I'm not going to go so far to say that Alvin Gentry doesn't coach this in practice, that Darren Erman doesn't work on this with the team. But oh boy, you do need to defend that and kind of deter that. Now, people are going to see that and think the defense was just so awful for the Pelicans. While it wasn't good, this is what the Rockets do. If you look at their shot chart, it's kind of a thing of beauty. There are shots from behind the three-point line and shots in the paint, and I think it's like five or six attempts in mid-range twos, basically, the entire game. Entire game. Take a look at it. You can go to NBA.com/stats and look at the shot chart for the match, and it's it's impressive to see. So, you know, no surprise here because, again, this is what the Rockets try and do. So other than, the team losing, the thing that's going to intrigue and make this game something to worth talking about is certainly going to be the pair of former Pelicans on this Houston Rockets team and Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon. Eric Gordon, we all knew, wasn't super-duper happy about being in New Orleans, being traded from the Clippers to there, then the Pelicans matching the offer sheet that the Suns made for him when he was a restricted free agent 4 years ago, and the whole drama and everything with that, and then not living up to the deal. I think it was like $54 million, something right around there. Maybe it was $60 million. And then going to Houston. And then Ryan Anderson, who Pelicans fans did really love, despite him being kind of inconsistent while he was here, went to Houston and then completely just roasted the Pelicans. And I talked about this in one of my first handful of podcasts. Roasted the Pelicans, saying he had more wide open shots in Houston's practices than he had had his entire career in New Orleans. And then, of course, if you actually go and look at the numbers on him, the dude had so many wide open three-pointers while he was here in New Orleans with the Hornets, Pelicans. And it's just, one, if you're a fan, it should piss you off a little bit because it's just not true. And there was almost no need for him to take these pop shots at this team. They paid him a lot of money and he was hurt for a good chunk of, and especially one that stood by him after the tragic situation with his girlfriend. So not a great look, pretty unclassy in my opinion. And frankly, I don't believe in this guy. You need to show respect to opponents, things like that. But your former team that really stood by you behind tough times, that believed in you and pays you a lot of money, you probably don't need to take shots at them like that for seemingly no reason. It doesn't appear that, you know, it was exactly bad blood between him and the organization. So a bit annoying. So let's talk about him first. Ryan Anderson, in what's kind of maybe the only moral victory of this loss Friday, again, the 122-100 loss to the Houston Rockets, Ryan Anderson shot 3-4-11 on the night for a total of 8 points, 27.3%. He was 2 of 8 from 3. That's what he's known for. Don't forget, he's a 3-point shooter. 2 of 8 from 3, 25%. feels a little bit good. Now, hey, maybe the Pelicans did a good job defending him and they didn't give him these wide open looks he's used to getting in Houston. Fortunately, when you have James Harden putting up 29 points, 13 assists, 11 rebounds, having a triple-double by the end of the third quarter, which is what he did, Pelicans had no answer for him. He also got to the line. He took 11 free throw attempts, made 9 of them. Dude's just good. Looks like he's going to be potentially the MVP of the league, especially with numbers like that, and leading this Houston team to a pretty surprisingly good record after the disaster that they were just 1 year ago. So, you know, he doesn't need to be the main scorer, Ryan Anderson, on this team, but hey, maybe they were bad looks. They were not. Of the 11 attempts he took, 10 of them were wide open. On open looks, he shot 3 of 10. So, hey, maybe those open looks you're getting don't matter if you're not going to make the shots, dude. Still, I get angry about him. The other Pelican on the team, Eric Gordon, had a good night. He was 10 of 17 for, you know, close to 60% on the night. And he hit 7 of 12 from 3 for another 58.3%, scored 29 points himself. Look, we already knew he was turning into a very good three-point shooter here in New Orleans, especially the playoff run they had when he came back early, when he decided against surgery on his shoulder, and then came back, helped lead this team to the playoffs. And without his shooting, he was shooting close to 40% in that second half of the year. The Pelicans don't make the playoffs. I think fans were very upset with his general attitude, his demeanor, the fact that he was injured and dinged up constantly. But he was turning into a good player. And he always had potential, and he was just never living up to it due to the injuries. So it's frustrating to see him go to the Houston Rockets and then start lighting it up. He's been shooting incredibly well from deep. He's the league leader, I think, in three-pointers made or three-point percentage. On the year, which is going to show you, more than that, he looks way more engaged than he did in New Orleans. I think part of that's finally he was an unrestricted free agent, could pick where he wanted to go, controlled his situation, wasn't stuck anywhere. Maybe he just didn't want to be. Wanted to be in Houston, finally got out of a place he didn't want to be. You know, the interest picks up. The kind of level he was dialed in picks up. I think it's a lot for him, just a mental and kind of emotional situation on why he's playing so well. He looks good on defense this year. Everyone, you know, he was bad in New Orleans on defense, but he had always had the tools to be good. And it goes to show you, he probably wasn't trying near as hard as he could have while he was here in New Orleans, which is probably going to send Pelicans fans into a bit more of a fury over him. But it is what it is. He's gone. He's doing well. And he lit up the Pelicans for a total of 29 points, 7 made threes. Pelicans had 9 in the entire game. Pelicans are one of the worst three-point shooting teams in the league thus far. Having that three-point shooting on this Pelicans team would certainly help. Imagine him, this version of Eric Gordon paired with Anthony Davis would be pretty cool. Speaking of Anthony Davis in the Rockets game, did get dinged up a little bit. The Rockets had this in hand. Davis got dinged up on, like, I think it was a knee contusion, comes out of the game, comes back in, plays for a little bit, was clearly not himself, stayed in for a little bit longer, and then when it was about a 20-point lead, the Pelicans pulled him. And a lot of people have been complaining this year, and rightfully so to an extent, that when Davis gets injured, goes out, Pelicans are down by a significant amount. He comes back in. He's listed as questionable. This is how it plays out. And this has happened 5 times maybe this season. I could go through the numbers probably. He gets hurt, goes to the locker room, is listed officially as questionable. He comes back like 5 minutes later and plays. And he's not himself, and they leave him in, potentially risking another injury or greater injury or aggravating the injury. And then eventually the game's just enough out of hand and he leaves. This happened against the Lakers, notably. There's been a few other games as well. And I think it's frustrating because you don't want to see him get injured and miss, you know, 10, 5, 7, whatever number of games it's going to be that you feel is inevitably going to happen because of his injury history. And so the move is to blame the coaching staff and to yell at them. That's not, I necessarily think, the right thing to do. I think a lot of him coming back into the game has to do with himself. I've mentioned it to you guys, and it's a well-known thing. Davis cares very much about his legacy and how he's perceived around the league and by fans and media all over. He doesn't like the injury-prone label that's been given to him. He doesn't like that people call him soft. I think when he comes back into these games, it's him being like, no, I'm going to go back in there because he wants to try and shed this perception about him and to change the narrative a little bit. I don't think it's the Pelicans coaching staff trying to throw him to the wolves and potentially getting him hurt. I think it's him and he wants to do that. And the Pelicans, you know, he's your star player. You kind of got to bend to his will a little bit. So they're letting him when maybe they should pull him. So on the night, Davis finished with 19 points. On 17 shots, kind of pedestrian game for him. Only played 22 minutes. You know, there's no one else who's very notable in this game. It was mainly the Rockets just kind of beasting with two guys. You know, you had Terrence Jones playing his former team. He put up 16 against him. You know, in about 30 minutes on 14 shots, he gets to the line a little bit. He's not consistent there. You know, it's Terrence Jones. He's not Ryan Anderson. He's not Eric Gordon. There's a reason he signed over here for the minimum. You know, the other real bright spot's going to be Cheick Diallo, who's when he gets run, he plays particularly well. 4-5 from the field, made both of his free throws, grabbed 7 boards, put up 10 points. For this young guy that the Pelicans took in a second round, he's becoming a bit of a bright spot. That dude has such a high motor, such high energy, that when it's like almost infectious when you're watching him on the court. He fights and goes after every rebound. He's also a little bit too aggressive and maybe too amped up that he kind of over pursues rebounds and misses some he probably should get. But as he spends time in the league, I think he's going to learn all this a little bit more, and you won't see that be a problem nearly as much. But right now, in what's becoming a very lost season, you know, he's a bit of a bright spot. Other thing to note, Tyreke Evans didn't play in this game as it was the second night of a back-to-back. The Pelicans are holding him out on that. Dante Cunningham was potentially going to return. Didn't end up playing. You figured with the game coming up else on the road trip here against the San Antonio Spurs last night in San Antonio, Tim Duncan's jersey retirement ceremony, the Pelicans might save him. They did. We'll talk about that game in about a minute here. Other notable absence was Solomon Hill. Had a child. Congratulations to Solomon Hill. That's pretty awesome. I personally have zero problem when an NBA player takes time off and misses a game for the birth of a kid. I know a lot of people do. I'm curious to see what people's takes are on this. So if you have a problem with it, or if you think it's totally okay, tweet me. It's at Nola Jake or at Locked On Pels. Always curious what people say with this sort of thing. But look, most people around the world, when you have a kid, you take time off. You don't go to your job that day. NBA players, no different. They're allowed to who miss some time for personal reasons. I'm sure it's built into their contracts, things like that. So, you know, good for him. He missed this game against the Houston Rockets. He missed the one against the San Antonio Spurs. Have no idea if he's going to play on Tuesday at Philly. We'll find out in the next day or so regarding that one. But good for him. Congratulations. That's a wonderful thing. Be a father. Sounds like everyone's healthy. Well, I'm sure they'll give us some details in the coming days. But again, congratulations to Solomon Hill. Not congratulations to the Pelicans with a 122-100 loss. Look, they were tired on the second night of a back-to-back. They were traveling on the road. There was no way they were going to have the energy to match up against James Harden. You had to figure Eric Gordon or Ryan Anderson, if not both, were going to be so jacked up to play their former team, amped up just to kind of stick it to him, really stick it to him. Eric Gordon did it. So, you know, it's kind of, what are you going to do? This isn't a good Pelicans team. You shouldn't have expected them to win this game. Loss sucks, but, you know, it is what it is. And then we get to the San Antonio game. It turns out it was a 113-100 loss to Pelicans with back-to-back 100-point games for a struggling offense. Not too bad. That 13 points, this game was a lot wider of a gap. That's closer than the game was made out to seem. You know, you'd like to think the Pelicans were going to maybe be a day more rested. They weren't on a back-to-back against the Spurs here. They actually had the healthiest team they've had all season and in a significant amount of time. Look, Holiday was playing. Tim Frazier was playing, who had been injured. You also had Tyreke Evans available. And Dante Cunningham came back. Only guy that really wasn't there who could have been there was Solomon Hill, again, for the birth of his child. So you have a healthy roster. You get at least a day of rest. Maybe you can kind of stick it to this Spurs team and hang and play well and maybe steal a win. And then I remembered it was Tim Duncan's jersey retirement, which was going to take place after the game. It's funny. He didn't even show up until like halftime. Of course, Tim Duncan's going to be late or not really care much about, you know, one of the greatest honors he's going to get as they retire his jersey for one of the best players in NBA history. But when you realize it's the Tim Duncan jersey retirement, you think there's any chance the Spurs were going to lose this game? No. They're doing the jersey retirement after the game. Fans stuck around for an hour and a half for this whole ceremony after they stayed there for a game. That's awesome. But there was no way they were going to lose. You're going to make your fans sit through a ceremony for an hour and a half after you drop a game? No way. You knew they were going to come out and play so amped up and make this a night to remember. And overall, they did beat a hapless Pelicans team. Shouldn't feel good about that, Spurs. Come on now. They're not good. Some highlight. Look, so Anthony Davis had probably his worst game of the season. 12 points on 12 shots. Didn't really look all that dialed in. The Pelicans didn't have good energy in this game. I always blame that a bit on coaching. You got to get your guys fired up. After the game, Gentry, well, hold on, we'll talk about that first in a sec, or some other things first. Evans played, he played 15 minutes since after he played 11 against the Pacers. So the minutes were increased. That was good. He looked a bit good at times in transition, but he's still not even remotely to himself. He looks, you know, half step slower than what he had been in the past. Did have some nice buckets in transition, scored 4 total points. But that's what you want to see. This Pelicans team has a chance to be very good in transition. And as much as I think we all don't think Tyreke Evans fits on this team, he can score in transition, and that's going to be a boon to the Pelicans going forward. Tim Frazier shot pretty well from deep. He was 3 of 5. His shooting's been much, much better as the season's gone on, better than his career has been. Now that he's, you know, maybe on a guaranteed contract, he's got a chance to feel a little bit safer about, you know, his future in the league. Buddy Hield was a decent bright spot for the Pelicans last night. 14 points, 2 of 4 shooting from 3. He's making his 3-pointers all of a sudden. The guy's shooting quite well. He's making multiple 3-pointers in most games in December. Really nice to see him coming into his own. Looks much more comfortable on offense. Was 6 of 11 overall. Scored in transition. Scored at the rim. Scored from 3. Perfect. Perfect. Again, his ceiling's not necessarily as high as someone like Murray over in Denver, but it's okay. He's doing what the Pelicans need him to do right now, which is scoring, which is spacing the court and attacking the rim when he can. He still does have the athleticism to do it. Unfortunately, still looks a bit lost on defense at times. Not at times, most of the time. So yeah, at times, because it's all the times. So looks lost on defense. He doesn't anticipate where screens are coming from. So when he runs into a screen, he hits that screen hard, and it just springs the ball handler at that point, or it leaves the man open off an off-ball cut, an off-ball screen, because he has no idea it's coming, and he has no chance to prepare and maybe go around it. Got to kind of have better court awareness. As a rookie, you're not expecting him to, so it's okay. But overall, he's improving. Let's be happy about that. We've got to look for bright spots here. Dante Cunningham, in his return, played 17 minutes after breaking, broken shin, basically. So that's nice to see. Hit a 3. He was shooting career best from 3-point this season. Was one of the better shooters on the Pelicans, so they desperately need that to get an injection of offense going. He's going to be rusty for a little bit. In the 17 minutes, he didn't play particularly well. He did have a positive plus-minus on the night, though, so it shows one of the better Pelicans just how outclassed they were by the Spurs. But overall, again, Cheick Diallo got into the game, too. With a full complement and almost a fully healthy roster, you had to figure his minutes were going to go down. And they're going to stay down in the meantime while this is going on. They might send him back down to the D-League, as he was basically brought up just to be another body and turned out to have some good performances that were a bit eye-opening. But he might go back down to the D-League. Right now, they're not worried about his player development at an NBA level, I think. You know, the Pelicans are still trying to win games and to try and maybe right this ship a little bit towards, you know, to have a good, nice run, even though playoffs are out of reach in the second half of the season. You can string together a bunch of wins, and it might give you some confidence and a boost going into next season, which is what they're going to want to try and do. So, you know, at least have something to build on. So he's going to have his minutes decrease probably for the, at least in the short time before the end of the season, where they're probably going to spike. But hey, he was still 3 of 4, had 6 points in 9.5 minutes of play, grabbed 4 rebounds. The dude has so much energy out there. It's needed, especially when the Pelicans come out flat like they did last night against the Spurs. So the issue was, they just looked out of sorts. The ball movement wasn't there. There was a lot of isolation. They actually played well in transition for the most part. Scoring 18 fast break points, that's exactly what they want to do, is push the pace. The problem is the Spurs are such a good team and so well coached. What they did was they basically marked Anthony Davis out of the game, wouldn't let him get the ball, were denying entry passes to him, basically made it so you couldn't get the ball to him, and it took the Pelicans out of their offense. They didn't know what to do there. With good on-ball defense, the Pelicans want to shoot early in the shot clock, and the Spurs denied those early chances, forcing the Pelicans to milk the shot clock and to take shots later. Pretty much as time is running down when you're just forced to kind of rip one, and it's not going to be a good look. It's not going to be a good take at that point. Pelicans were just outclassed all night long. Nothing they could do. Sign of a good coach, sign of the culture that the Spurs have there. This is why the Pelicans are going to try and win right now, compete and play hard. They want to build that culture the Spurs have. They lose Tim Duncan, top five NBA player of all time, or you could argue where you want to slot him in. He's probably top five, though. And they're still playing at such a high level, and that is a testament to what they have built there. Ultimate small market team. Ultimate any team in the NBA. Small, big, it doesn't matter. Look at what they've done. It is so tremendous. And the Pelicans are looking to get at least a little bit of that magic. Every team is. But you got to win games, and you got to play hard to do it, and the Pelicans are still figuring that out right now. That's why they're not going to punt on this season yet. They'll sacrifice tanking and a better draft pick to try and build that culture. You can argue if it's a good trade-off or not, but it's the one they want to make right now. And after the game, Alvin Gentry kind of spoke about this. There was a lot of isolation basketball from the Pelicans, and part of that was, like I just said, the Spurs defense was so good and kind of smothering all night. Alvin Gentry said, we're not an isolation team, and this team isn't. None of these guys here are great in isolation other than Anthony Davis and maybe Tyreke Evans, but that's iffy. This is a team that needs to pass the ball and to move the ball around to generate open looks so they have an open three, whatever it might be, or to generate an off-ball cut that leads to the rim, or to create some space and separation off a cut, off a ball screen that gets you to the rim as you're freed up and you can run a pick and roll, whatever it might be. They didn't do that tonight. Hero ball, isolation ball, it was bad. If you didn't watch it because the Saints game was wrapping up at the same time, good, you didn't miss anything. It was crap. After the game, basically, Alvin Gentry said, I don't know what this team is. I don't exactly want that out of the head coach. You've got to really worry right now that the Pelicans just aren't listening to him. Legit concern that we're going to need to start talking about in the next, over the next games, weeks, months, whatever it is, as long as he's here. Because you're the head coach. You've been the head coach for a year and a quarter, let's say now. You should know what you have. And you need to do a better job coaching him and getting him to the right place. If these aren't the guys, look, this is an overhauled roster from last season. So did the Pelicans completely strike out again, or is this a coaching issue? There's some talent. You've seen them play well at times where they can shoot and when there is good ball movement. Why are they not doing this on a consistent basis? I personally point to a coach in that situation. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm not. Maybe it's just bad players. Not smart players. That's certainly part of the problem. But you're a quarter of the way in. You should be able to have stamped out this ISO ball and explain what you want to do. Maybe it's not going to happen against the Spurs. Like I said, the defense was particularly good last night. But still, should have been better. I blame that on the coach. I'm allowed. It's my podcast. I can also say what I want. And I know a lot of people agree with me. Ultimately, yeah, Dell Demps is the architect of this team, and he put it together, and he hired Gentry. But Gentry needs to get more out of these guys. They can play. It's a problem here. And if they want to build this culture and win some games and try and get to make the season a stepping stone for where they want to go eventually, they're not doing it right now. But enough about depressing losses and bad play and bad coaching and bad roster building. Let's talk about the CBA, the collective bargaining agreement, and what's going on with there. So about a week ago or so, it sounds like the Players Association and the NBA owners reached a tentative agreement, and we'll go by a bunch of stuff's been reported, which is kind of cool. Learning about this, and I had a chance a couple of years ago to really dive into how the CBA worked. Gabe Feldman is a professor at Tulane Law. He's one of the top he's one of the top, if not the top, sports law guy in the country. And I got to speak with him at length for a little bit about everything, went to a talk he gave on it. Really learned a lot about it. Very interesting, very smart guy. Lucky resource for the city of New Orleans. So some of the highlights of it. It sounds like the players are still going to get the same percentage of BRI, which is basketball-related income. But it's going to be significantly higher because the league did sign that $24 billion television contract, and BRI is basically indexed off of that. So there's going to be a significant increase in player contracts and maximum salaries. I'm not going to dive into some of those. So some things that didn't change when the BRI rose last, which is kind of how it's all based off of and what the salary cap's based off of. The biannual exception didn't increase. A lot of those, the mid-level exception didn't increase. Those stayed the same, meaning if you got one of those deals, you weren't really getting the inflated money. The rookie scale also didn't increase. That's going to be increased now for there. So these rookie contracts that the past like year or two, if you sign one, Buddy Hield's going to be on such a dirt cheap contract compared to someone taken at 6 overall in this coming draft. That's why these draft picks last year were such commodities, because those guys were going to be on dirt cheap deals that were probably, you know, I don't know what the new numbers are going to be here, but it was basically they're much cheaper than guys drafted the year after them by like a significant margin and not just like an inflation situation. So, you know, the rookie, if the Pelicans have a top 10 draft pick, which they should, is not going to be as good for teams as they have been in the past. There's going to be two-way contracts for players who shuttle their time between their team and the D-League. We're going to get accommodated a bit differently some more when they're in the D-League, maybe earn some more money. There's already been a designated player exception contract that each team kind of has one of. It's that one where you can offer the extra year. So instead of 4 years, you can offer five. Anthony Davis signed one. And that was a percentage of the salary cap with that Derrick Rose rule that I've talked about, that you guys have heard about with Anthony Davis' extension. You could earn up to 30% of the salary cap. That's why Davis lost about $25 million or so when he didn't make an All-NBA team this past offseason. Well, they're creating another one, and you can add a six-year onto it for players who meet certain criteria, and that's what we're going to talk about in a minute. That is a significant amount of guaranteed money for a guy, a six-year contract versus a four-year contract. Very good for players who want just to make sure they get as much that they can. Other kind of things, there's going to be a shorter preseason. And then they're going to stretch out the regular season and an earlier start to the regular season. The goal is to reduce back-to-back games and stretches of four games and five nights, which basically leads to higher number of injuries and lower all quality of play. So it's going to be very interesting to see how this is going to go and what other things are going to come out. They did say all NBA players are getting free league pass, so good for them. It's kind of cool. Got to get one of those 10-day contracts just so I can get free league pass overall for myself. That would be a nice little fun thing. It's expensive and doesn't always work. So how's this, you know, factor in matter to the Pelicans? And it's going to be with that designated player contract, that six-year deal. So that six-year designated player thing is going to be crucial for Anthony Davis, and it's going to make his decision to potentially leave the Pelicans when his contract expires, and assuming he's not asking for a trade, anything like that, which there's no reason to necessarily believe he's going to do, even though people are constantly talking about it. So basically, he can get a six-year deal versus, it's either a four or five, I'm not entirely sure yet. A lot of the details haven't come out. But let's say for a six-year deal for him, the Pelicans, it now jumps. Instead of 30% of the cap, he can get 35% of the cap. If he leaves in free agency, they can offer him 30. So that's a 5% difference right there. And when you're talking about a huge contract and a salary cap over $100 million, which is around where it's expected to rise to and be at, and potentially only going to go up from there, that's a minimum of $5 million every year. Even if the cap stayed the same, $5 million every year. Over 6 years, that's $30 million right there. It's a lot of money, guaranteed money. These aren't NFL contracts where you can just cut a guy and get out of it. Second they sign these contracts, they are fully guaranteed in the NBA. $30 million guaranteed right there alone. not only that, the way the raises work with why their salaries are higher each year, each year, each year, it's usually the incumbent team, his home team currently, can offer him a higher raise. So he can get a 7.5% raise, which is the standard raise in NBA contracts. I don't think, and again, they don't really talk about it yet, another team, if he were to leave in free agency, can offer him that much. That's another 3% right there, though, if it's like 4.5%, 5%, whatever it might be. That's a lot of money all of a sudden. So now he's looking at maybe each year, $8 million or so, potentially, of a difference that he could earn. Over a six-year deal, that is a massive amount of money to turn down. So it could help them keep Anthony Davis. This is, I think, what the owners want. You want to keep your own homegrown players, the guys you drafted, the guys that you've built this team around. And rather than them bolting and leaving and forming a super team, you know, don't forget the owners really didn't like what happened in Miami. They really don't like what happened in Golden State with Kevin Durant going there, though that is an entirely different set of circumstances and reasons why. And if you guys all want, I can go into that for you one day on the podcast. So they want to prevent that from happening. And one of the best ways to do it is to make their current team being able to offer him an ungodly amount of money more to stay. Even to a guy who's earned $150 million, let's say, in their career, it's tough to turn down a guaranteed difference of, say, $45 million. Potentially more than that. No matter how much money you have, it's tough to say no to that. And I know very few players... You know, almost all of them talk about how it's not about the money. They want to win. They want to do this, whatever it is. Very few of them still take less. David West is really like the only guy I can think of who took such a small amount to go to the Spurs after playing in Indiana and then took even less to go to the Golden State Warriors as he's chasing a ring because he just wants one and a title. So, you know, so many guys say this, but again, most don't. So, to Anthony Davis, he's going to have to weigh up what's most important to him, being stuck here in New Orleans where they might not be winning it. Hey, maybe, you know, if you're super optimistic, you think they might. Or does he want to go off somewhere else and win and leave for greener pastures and not make as much money? So who knows? It's, you know, it's not guaranteed that it'll keep him here. Potentially, if he forces a trade, I don't know how they're changing it, but if the team gets traded to retains the bird rights, what lets you go above that designated player stuff, he could get both. Carmelo Anthony kind of had it both ways where he forced the trade from Denver to New York, even though he might have ended up on a worse team. So not always the best case to do it, but you can get both potentially, and it'll remain to be seen if Anthony Davis can. But it should give Pelicans fans a reason of hope, an idea that they can retain him here beyond this contract extension that's kicked in this year. I told you all I'm worried about this. It's like the clock is starting to tick down, you know, on this window of him potentially being on the team, and you're going to be faced with another Chris Paul situation. This is so much money, though, that you might be the Pelicans and Pelicans fans and everyone might be able to avoid this altogether. At a certain point, sometimes money wins. It's important. Let's not lie. So we'll see what happens. Should give Pelicans fans a lot of hope, though. It's also probably going to mean that the Pelicans are going to be faced with a really difficult decision this offseason about Jrue Holiday. And we'll talk about that more as we get closer towards the end of the season. On whether or not, you know, he's a free agent after this year. Are they going to pay him an absolute ton to keep him? Probably somewhere around like $25, $27 million a year to keep Jrue Holiday here. Or are they going to let him walk and not get anything in return? And that's a tough call. I can't answer that right now. That is a lot of money to pay Jrue Holiday, a guy who's been hurt, who even when he's fully healthy and very good, you've got to wonder, you know, he's not going to be the second best player on a championship team. But hey, I've gone on long enough, and these are discussions for another day, and that's going to certainly be a hot topic and interesting topic as we get later into the season. So thank you all for listening to the longer podcast of Locked On Pelicans today on this Monday. Tomorrow, Pelicans play against the Philadelphia 76ers. Need revenge. Got to win that one after the piss poor showing against them and the Smoothie King Center. What was it, 2 weeks ago now? Loss that could have cost Alvin Gentry's job. Almost surprising that it didn't, though that Sixers team's a bit surprising at times. Embiid is definitely the process, the truth, whatever you want to call him. So again, thank you all for listening. Hope you enjoyed the intro music. There's going to be some outro music kicking in just a second. That is by a band, local band here in New Orleans, indie band called The Vox and the Hound. They're on Twitter. It's @The Vox and the Hound. They're also got a website. It's at, or it's thevoxandthehound.com. Don't forget, new album coming out called Aloha Shores. They're going to be at Gasa Gasa on February 10th for the release of their first single. That'll be a lot of fun. I'll be there. Big thanks to those guys for lending me the music. I'll have some different songs of theirs in the intro and outro music as we go on through the season. So that'll be a lot of fun. You know, nice to add some energy to the podcast because we've got it here. Pelicans don't have it on the court at times, though. So thank you all for listening. I'm your host, Jake Madison, at Nola Jake on Twitter. Definitely check out bourbonstreetshots.com where you can check out a lot of my work, a lot of work of other great writers. Don't forget the weekly Locked On NBA podcast and the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast if you're a fantasy basketball player. Definitely great things. And don't forget, Saints won. Fun, exciting game over the weekend. Tune into Locked On Saints today and the rest of the week. Still an outside chance at the playoffs. Not completely dead just yet. So again, I'll be back with you guys tomorrow previewing the game, and thanks for listening.
Napa Know How.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.